Hello and welcome to episode number 25 of the Mental Health Marriage. This is a podcast for the spouses and partners of those who are mentally ill. I'm your host, and for the sake of my husband's anonymity, you can call me M. As the spouse of a man with bipolar 2, I will share my story, my struggles, and my insights with you, and also share conversations with people like you whose stories need to be heard. I hope to build a community where we can all laugh and cry together at the paradox and irony that mental illness can be. Well, I hope that everyone survived the holidays. It was definitely an interesting year. I know in the United States, we are all over the place with the different ways that we're dealing with this pandemic. My family chose to not get together this year, which we felt like was the best decision for us. It was definitely hard to not see family. The break from, my kids do like a hybrid learning, so they go to school 2 days a week. And obviously the baby's still home with us, but we just felt like that winter break was an eternity and our kids just wanted to be entertained the whole time. We were really worn down by the time it was over, and it's taken me a while to get this part two out, mostly because we both were not in a great headspace. I particularly was struggling with some anxiety, and it was just a lot. And it's hard because, I mean, I preach exercise and self-care so much on this podcast, but a lot of that changed at the start of this pandemic, and I stayed away from the gym for most of last year. It's technically not even supposed to be open, and I've been exercising at home, but it just doesn't quite, like, I can't get it to the level that I need it to be to have an effect on my mood. So I actually went back to the gym following distancing guidelines and wearing my mask, and I feel so much better today. I was noticing, just having a perspective shift, when I'm in a bad place myself, everything with my husband kind of scares me more, and I just don't deal with it as well. But if I can get myself back on level footing, then we can have productive conversations and come up with plans. And our most recent plan is, okay, we need to get out the bright light that's used for seasonal affective disorder. I don't know if any of you have one of those, but it's just basically the super bright light that you turn on in the morning as you're eating breakfast, and it helps you wake up. And we've just decided we need to have some kind of a project to get my husband out of bed every morning, because if he can get up at a reasonable time, that helps his mood. He's also currently kind of doing keto, because when things get really bad, that seems to help. So yeah, he's not doing great. Something that made it even worse is he was lifting some weights, which I didn't even really realize he was doing, but apparently it was helping with his mood. He was finally doing some exercise, and he was lifting weights, and he kind of twisted his wrist in a wrong way. And he's been wearing a brace ever since, and he hasn't been able to exercise ever since then, which is so frustrating. Sort of the same as my situation, but worse. So he's been trying to lay off on that, but he needs the boost that exercise brings. So yeah, we're just kind of in survival mode, and let's try to find some productive things to do every day. Let's leave the house at least once a day, even if it's for an errand we created out of nothing, just to have an excuse to leave. So we just kind of pushing through the winter, pushing through these crazy political times, and just trying to hold on to any semblance of sanity. And some days it feels like we're succeeding more than others, but I'm relying on my support system a lot, having people to talk to. And so yeah, we just got to do everything we can, and it's not always going to be the best of times. And I was having close to a panic attack yesterday, which I've had like two others in my life, so I'm not like super prone to them, but just once in a while. But I had a really interesting experience. In the latter half of this podcast, Temple and I talk about a concept of radical acceptance. This kind of comes from some of my studies of Buddhism, and I was spiraling with all my thoughts of anxiety, and I was saying things like, oh, do I need to get back into therapy? Maybe I need to start medications again. Maybe I need to do XYZ with the kids. Maybe I need to make sure that we move sooner than we thought. Like, I had this huge list of things that I can do to make the anxiety go away. And I was like, I need to buy an elliptical machine and I need to use it every, it just, I was to go to any measure to make this terrible feeling of anxiety go away. But as I was going through that list, I was starting to hyperventilate and have a panic attack. But I remembered some things that I've been reading, and I first of all just sat down and I breathed and I said, I am feeling anxious. And I still was like hyperventilating through the statement. And then the thing that really changed it was when I said, it's okay that I'm anxious. I welcomed the feeling of anxiety just to say, it's fine that you're here. It's okay to be anxious. And I don't know if it's supposed to work this way every time, but it almost instantly, my panic attack went away when I was just like, it's fine if you're anxious. So, and honestly, I've felt much better since then. And then I got a really good workout in today. So I feel like a different person than I did this last week and the last weekend. I actually also went to bed early, took some melatonin earlier. We're trying to, my baby sleeps pretty good at night, but he wakes me up at least once or twice every night. And, you know, if you do that for 5 months, it really wears on you. So I just decided, you know what, even though we may only go to bed half an hour after our kids go to bed, like, it's, sleep is just so essential. So anyway, so that's why it took me so long to get this next part out. I'm sure a lot of you are going through similar things. I know a lot of you are going through worse things. It's just a hard time of year, and mental illness is just really, really tough in these times. So I hope that everyone has the support and the help that they need. And I hope that this rest of this conversation with Temple can give you some peace and some things to reflect on. So I just loved talking to her and grateful that she shared with us. Check out her book, Oops, I Married a Bipolar. You can get the audio version. It was really fun to listen to. So thanks again, Temple, and enjoy the last half. We're talking about the pandemic as this conversation continues.
The pandemic was tough for us.
Yeah.
More for me, because I'm an extroverted personality type. So this has been terrible for me.
I feel you. And I was going to say it's been worse for me than it was for my husband. So keep going on that.
But, you know, the part that that really affected him is the symptom of paranoia. It's so prevalent for my husband. Okay. So telling, a schizoaffective bipolar that there is a deadly virus.
Mister, the internet waves are coming through the walls into my body. Oh, no.
Right. So what do you think thinks about the coronavirus, you
right.
know?
Oh.
He did not want to go anywhere. And we were doing things together. We would go to the grocery store together, things like that. And I usually, we're pretty good buddies. We do everything together because he has lost a lot of his short-term memory. So mm-hmm. I like to keep him active with me. Like, let's go to the grocery store and remember where things are in the store and things like that.
Wow.
But he had some major meltdowns and said, I'm not leaving the house.
Wow.
That's it. I'm not leaving the house. I'm actually not going to leave this spot. And I'm going to sit here in the garage and not move and smoke cigarettes. And I'm like, whoa, it's been tough.
Has
you know?
There been any, like, progress? Or is he just kind of, I don't know, does it cycle with how paranoid he is?
It does cycle. The cycles are long.
Mm.
Like, he's been on pretty much a manic, paranoid, close to psychosis cycle since we moved here 2 years ago.
Ugh.
With very small breakthroughs in between. So, you know, I wish I had a fairy tale ending so bad that I could say, hey, if you guys do all the work and do everything right, it's going to be cool. But it's really more about learning to deal with your new normal.
Yeah.
And really enjoying the moments in between. And for me, I've had to do a lot of self-care and growth to make sure that I'm not overreacting to somebody who's sick in a negative way.
Yeah. Without,
you know,
without laying yourself down on the altar of mental illness.
Yeah. Well, I'm a, I have a, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but you know, something really occurred to me recently. I go to counseling all the time. Mm-hmm, P.S. Good. I go to counseling.
I'm glad to hear
regularly.
It.
Yeah. And I've been in counseling long before I met my husband. Mm-hmm. So I have a habit of support. So I want to make sure that we kind of get that message out there that being habitual to making sure that you have some kind of support team in place is very critical. Because if you're left alone to your own devices, the very softest spots of you are going to get jabbed so hard.
Yes.
By this illness. And there's things that you just simply have to toughen up about. Because whatever your weak spot is, bipolar disorder has a way to say it to your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I've had people email me and ask me, like, how do I view this differently and not take it personally? And I'm like, well, just saying to yourself, don't take it personally, is probably not going to work. Like, you got to go to counseling, and it's like, it takes years. I mean, I don't mean to say that is a, like, there's no hope, but like, dude, it is mental work and it's exhausting. And there have been so many times where I've come out of therapy just just that feeling of exhaustion, like, holy cow. I just totally.
Oh my God. Absolutely. It's mental warfare.
Yes. Warfare is a better word.
Like, there are times when you are at war with the illness, you know, mm-hmm. for me, and I have to go, oh my gosh, I have to stop fighting this disorder, this illness, and I need to get back to myself, you know, and it's in those moments where I'm in survival mode. That was my kind of aha moment that I had a couple weeks ago, is I've been so focused on trying to keep my husband from going into survival, fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Because once he's in survival, then the mania starts, you know, escalating, and he could pack a bag, pretend he's going somewhere. I don't know where he's going, but he's going somewhere. And he's going to fight me with any ammunition he has about my past, about my personality, anything he can use to get me to go away. Okay. And that's where people get really broken by this illness, because they believe what these people are saying to them. And it's simply not true. It's coming from a place of protection and survival that they don't, you know, it's not like you're in the jungle and you have spears to throw. So they have words. They have words to throw. That is their ammo, and that's what they're going to use. So if you're in the line of fire, it's going to hurt. And that's where the mental stability for yourself as the spouse really, really needs to stay consistent, so that I can say, hey, oh, I know why I'm fighting with him, because he hit a button in me that now I'm in survival, and my survival mechanism is to fight. Yeah. I'm not a fleer. I don't run. I literally can't get my feet to move when I'm in survival. Mm-hmm. So if I'm fighting somebody who is also a survival fighter, this is going to go to the death. Somebody has to stop it, right?
Totally.
So I just recently kind of came back to reality about that. My counselor helped me, because she's like, Temple, you seem very stressed lately. I said, it's probably because I've been fighting with my husband so much. And she said, oh, well, why can't you walk away? So, oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Interesting.
And she goes, well, it's because you're in survival. And, you know, you're a fighter. That's how you survive. Your words, you use your words as ammunition too. So you can't have two people that are using words to fight. Then it's a disaster. It's a war zone.
Well, it's like adding either fire with fire, or it's like you need to be the water. It's like that radical acceptance of the reality of the moment maybe would help you see more clearly that this is the illness speaking, and you can just breathe and walk away and diffused. You know, well, I mean, it might not work every time. I don't know, but definitely fighting back probably doesn't work every time.
Fighting back never, ever has it been successful. Yeah. But walking away has worked many, many times. So I like that you said, I need to be the water. I need to be able to move.
Yeah.
Because you can get emotionally trapped in the experience, you know, that freeze point. Mm-hmm. where you'll just stay and nothing can get your feet to turn around. But you just saying that right now, like, I have to be the water, helped me energetically to say, I'm going to have to flow out of here.
Well, and I love water because water is, it can be calm, it can change shape, but, like, there's hardly anything as powerful as water, too. Like, it's not some resisted, some passive thing. It shapes everything around it.
Well, we lived right by the beach for 3 years.
So you know.
And that was so
powerful.
Oh,
I loved that comment. I loved that comment in the book that the ocean was the only thing bigger than his mania. I'm like, oh, I feel you there. Whew.
Oof. Yes. I felt that too. And we used to go to the beach every winter time when it was, you know, very stormy and a lot of action with the waves. And I would always go there and just plant a little chair and blankets and sit there. And I would just let the water, that energy, that powerful energy, just pull all that pain out of me.
And I
wouldn't feel guilty, you know? Yeah. You never feel like you unload on somebody and you're like, I'm so sorry. I just put that on.
Yes, I definitely know that feeling.
Yeah.
Well,
worst. I don't feel that way with the ocean because it's so much bigger than me. I'm just a little drop that my problems can energetically be released and it will just dissipate. And Chris used the ocean every day and it was really good for him. So stay in touch with nature for sure.
For sure.
It's a good thing.
Well, I'll just add, as an outside perspective, like, you're living in this relationship in your own head and it's so easy to become like self-critical and you're obviously doing the work, but the way I view it, it's like these experiences are making you the ocean. It's like the more you develop that sense of groundedness, like, you can hold more without it washing you away.
Yes, exactly. I'm a pretty grounded type of person.
Yeah.
I think I take advantage of myself that way.
Interesting.
By being in very highly charged and highly complicated situations and being able to stay present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so be aware of that. If you're the type of person who's really solid, you could be the one that's attracted to very complex situations.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be true. I was talking to my best friend yesterday, and she's bipolar, and it was a really sweet conversation, but she's like, it's pretty interesting that you're married to someone and your best friend, and I'm like, yeah, it is kind of interesting, but, like, I'm okay with it, and I'm grateful for what I've learned, but, yeah, there's got to be a reason for it.
You know, that's interesting that you tell me that. That your best friend has bipolar as well. And you may be just the type of person that, you know, maybe you're a transmuter of energy where people can easily talk to you and you can easily release energy compared to them being able to release that particular energy, you know. But we have to be careful about that.
For sure. I mean, some of it I'm sure is negative. Like, I think sometimes I've attracted people in my life who I can feel dominant over. Like, well, at least I don't have this. You know, like, I know there's pieces of that, and that's probably comes from lack of power. You said something earlier about that, and I'm like, ooh, guilty. That is me. But,
Well, during the summertime, we were doing great. My husband had the foresight to go buy a bunch of stuff for the yard and make a garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we planted tomatoes and potatoes and peppers and onions and all kinds of stuff and flowers. And we have a very small yard, but we packed that thing with vegetables and plants. And so, you know, he kind of had this insight about the pandemic.
Hmm.
To do that. And that was our saving grace because every day we would go out there and tend to the yard
and be and really, with the earth and in your bodies. And that's so healthy.
I tell him when he starts spinning out, I'm like, you need to get your hands in some dirt, you know? And I would get him on a project like, hey, dig this plant up and move it over there and replant it. And he would feel so much better afterwards.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, think about when you're not grounded. okay, what that feels like, just like the anxiety, kind of low level anxiety, and you kind of walk around the house too much. You go back to the same spot because you forgot things three mm-hmm. times, you know, like amplify that times a million, because bipolar is an ungrounded illness.
Yes, that's totally true.
So they constantly need to get back in their body, back in their body, yeah. back in their body.
Well, that's how my husband deals with it. If you give him a project, and I know this is how his own father copes too, like give him a project that involves doing something with your hands, and that's always helpful.
Totally. Man, this is the year of the project, right?
Yeah, true story. Maybe that's why he's been so great. Like, I have a job, and then I come home and fix our yard. And
well, I'm really glad to hear that. My husband has been on disability for a couple years. So yeah. I know I told you about that in the last podcast, but I do want people to understand that that is an option.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
My husband has not been in any condition long enough to be able to work a full-time job, and just being able to relieve him of that and have disability is giving him the freedom to get through treatment and stay in treatment.
Yes.
There are attorneys that will take your case that you don't have to pay until it's been approved, and then they take a percentage.
Yeah. So, that's really good to
especially
know.
Especially if you're, yes. You know, think about that. We don't give people time to recover
no.
for anything, not even having a baby. I mean, how much time do they
that's
give
true.
You? Like 8 weeks, 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's laughable.
It's laughable. So what if you have your brain blows up?
Yeah.
We'll give you a weekend.
Yeah, so what?
You know?
Can I have 5 days off of work, please? It's ridiculous.
Right. Can I have a year off of work? Will you hire me back after I go inpatient care and figure out my medications?
Yeah.
It's not there.
Well, and then you've risked letting them be aware that there's a mental health problem. And in some states are better than others with how protected you are. I think Washington and Oregon are better than some. But still, it's like you've put this out on the table, and now there's a stigma against you in your workplace.
Yeah, and I hope that you and I can be part of breaking that.
Yes.
You know, I do think transparency, even though I know you are protecting your husband, I'm not giving you a hard time. And I did change.
I noticed
that. I have
my
maiden name on my book.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to list it.
But it wasn't because of him. I've asked my husband. He's very clear that he doesn't need to be protected. He fully supports that I am the voice of this situation. Mm-hmm. He's not somebody who's going to be in front of the camera or get on a podcast. So God gets to use me to be his voice and tell his story. And really, the people that have bipolar disorder, they're usually not the ones that are on Google going, what is bipolar disorder?
That's true.
It's the spouses.
True. Yeah.
So you and I need to talk to the spouses and help them manage the advocacy part and get the husband or wife the help before everything
has blown up. Yeah.
Before everything, all the shit hits the fan and they've lost it all and they've cheated and they've spent the money and they've ruined the credit and, you know, all those things that happen a lot.
What is your long-term plan then, as far as like the book and your future ways to be an advocate?
Well, I want to write a second book of going through treatment. It's been very complicated. I don't even have a nice way to say it.
Yeah.
It's been disheartening. It's been infuriating. I've learned so many tough lessons on how to deal with doctors and with counselors. And I want to be able to share that so that people don't have to go through everything the hard way like I have been. The mental health world in itself needs healing.
Yes,
it absolutely. Needs to do better.
It does.
Right now, all they have is medication, and everybody's struggling with it. So my advocacy, my dream, my hope, my desire is that we learn to integrate holistic medicine into the mental health industry, that it goes hand in hand.
Oh, I'm totally with
you
there.
Not one or the other.
Absolutely. You're a full human being. You're not just your physical body, like your experiences and your thoughts and all these things that you carry with you.
Julie Fast is a really good one to follow about the practicality of treating bipolar disorder. And her line really helped me realize that the other things that you try are not going to really take effect until you just treat bipolar first. So in our case, that's very relevant because we've done all the other things. We've changed his diet. He eats a lot of fruits and vegetables. A high glucose diet is very important for anybody with mental illness because glucose is the brain's number one source of fuel. So without healthy glucose, they turn to processed sugars, sodas, things like that, which are harmful, right? Yeah. So we've done the diet changes. We've done exercise. He's an avid walker. He walks 10,000, 15,000 steps a day. Prayer, meditation, all that stuff. And yet he still has mania and psychosis. So counseling isn't really as effective if we can't control the mania.
Well, that's very poignant. Yes. So treat it first.
Treat it first.
And it often gets treated last.
That was the first thing I said.
Yeah.
Yes, girl. They're trying to get him to talk about his abusive childhood when he was at his heightened mania.
Yeah, that's just a joke.
Like, this is doing nothing, people.
Yeah.
This is not effective. You know, you're just spinning him out harder.
Well, and I used to be so confused by that because I didn't understand what bipolar was. And so when my husband would tell me that he didn't need counseling, I'm like, you sound like Mr. Delusions of Grandeur when you say that. I'm like, I don't need counseling. I'm like, everyone needs counseling. What are you talking about? But it's true that he would not have benefited from counseling in that state.
Right. It's complicated, right? Especially mm-hmm. for women, because we just go, let's just talk about our feelings.
It totally works. Yeah.
Let's just talk about it. Let's just keep talking about it.
Forever and ever. Uh-huh.
My husband's like, I want to stop talking about this. I don't want to talk about this. It's making me feel worse. So he was showing me that with his symptoms. He wasn't telling me that. He was just showing me that because he still went to counseling every week. Because I told him, if you want to stay married to me, you got to stay in counseling. And all it was doing was spinning him out. And so now at this point, we have a working relationship with his psychiatrist where here's another thing I want to make sure to tell you as the spouse is try to be there for the appointments.
Yes.
I haven't missed an appointment in four years. I've been to every psychiatrist, every counseling appointment, even he's just now going to counseling on his own. Mm-hmm. But before, I would go also because he was still manic. And
who knows what he's going to say or tell them. Exactly. Yes. Or he'll say,
manic
I'm fine.
Is a big fat liar.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I'm fine. Thank you for saying that. Yes. He said he was fine. He always said he was fine. Things are great. I love my wife. She's awesome. Oh, my gosh. Everything's
congratulations.
So good.
It seems like you guys have solved it.
Oh, you guys have really done the good work. I'm like, do you think I can have a few minutes with your counselor before we go?
Yeah.
So you have to have a working relationship with
that
their provider.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely excellent advice. And that is hard to do. Like, I think doctors aren't even used to people expecting that of them, which is silly, but.
I had a psychiatrist that did not want me in the room, and she kept going to Chris and asking him questions and he would lie. And I just sat there quietly for session after session. And then finally I was like, look, lady, I'm not going anywhere. I told her when he left the room, I said, I'm not going anywhere because he's not telling you even a fraction of what's actually going on. So if you're going to help my husband, I'm part of the equation here. So get used to seeing me. I'm coming every single time. And yeah. It's not like I want to, it's not like this is what I want to do with my time, but why would I it's like sending a 5-year-old into counseling and expecting them to know what to do.
Yeah. So you obviously, You have a lot of things about you that have made it possible for you to navigate your way through this. Obviously, it's been very painful, and I'm sorry that you've had to experience all these things. But would there ever be a situation where you hear someone else's story and go, okay, maybe staying is not the right answer for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've heard many of them in my support groups where it was healthier to leave.
Yeah. I want to point that out because I don't want anyone to be under the impression that this podcast is to convince you to stay in a bad marriage. I sometimes worry that it may come across that way.
I don't think you are. It's really an individual choice. Mm-hmm. I don't tell people to leave, and I don't tell people to stay. That's a personal choice. And I do have women in my support group that reach out to me a lot because I've been there for several years now. And they're like, you know, this and this and this is happening. I said, well, is he going to treatment? No, he refuses. It's been, you know, 3 years. Oof. He refuses to take his meds. He refuses to talk to the counselor. Like, okay. And now you've got two babies at home and you're sick and you have no money and your life is falling apart. You know, like, how much can you take?
Yeah. There's definitely a limit. You know? Yeah.
There's a limit. If I reached my limit, I would go. And I heard another woman that you interviewed. I think her name was S. And she was talking about that she'd been there in the relationship for a very long time, like 20 years.
Yeah. Yep.
And her faith really was holding her in the marriage in a lot of ways. And I just want to make it clear that I do not feel any spiritual repercussion that would come my way from saying, I am not going to go through this anymore. If I reach the limit that I feel I'm more abused than I am useful, or he stopped participating, then I would find a way for him to be in a safe place without me.
Yeah. And I agree with you there.
But I would keep in touch with him.
I worry sometimes that people link a religious tradition and dogma too much to I have to stay. And I don't think that's what God intends. I think God intends people to heal. And if you can't heal in that relationship, I don't think it's right to just sacrifice your life to it, you know?
For me, what I have to ask myself is, what am I willing to live with?
Yeah.
What am I willing to live with him? And what am I willing to live with without him? So as of right now, my husband fully participates in his treatment and he's still sick.
Yeah.
So for me, that tells me that I'm still in a position of wanting to support him and advocate for his recovery. And there's times when he, you know, will stop taking his meds, which he has a couple times. And we've rallied. And he knows that my position is I will not let him end up on the street. So if he's that sick that he's going to blow out and be somebody with psychosis walking the street, I will call the police. Mm-hmm. I will do whatever I have to do to get him into the hospital. It's a tough position to get to, but when you realize that it's for the greater good, you're saving your husband's life and probably another 10 years off of his brain by getting him into the hospital, then letting him run around manic and abusing himself, you'll make that phone call.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, we probably should wrap it up. I might break this into two parts, so you're like the star of my show now.
I know, I was thinking about the time and I haven't even looked, but
I don't mind at all. It's been lovely. But is there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up?
I just want to also say to be aware of your own caregiver burnout. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced that a lot this year, and it's caregiver burnout comes from doing the same thing over and over and not getting any progress.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I have to reteach my husband how to wash his face and brush his teeth and take his pills every day. And every day I'm going, is today the day that he can do it on his own? And it's that piece right there that it's not changing that is gonna, it has burned me out.
Yeah. Understandably.
And I had to have my counselor tell me, hey, you're the one in a cycle. You're stuck. So be careful when you have become, gotten to a place where you've lost compassion.
Yeah.
And find other ways. And the way for me to get out of that is usually by helping somebody besides him.
Yeah, yeah.
If my nieces are struggling and I call them and they're like, oh, yeah, my husband's being a jerk, da, 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 and I talk them through it and give them a couple tips, I feel so much better.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. My best friend, it's not a burden to me at all, her mental illness. It's like I feel great when I'm able to be a friend to her if she's up or if she's down. And it doesn't take a mental toll on me. And it's probably just because there's some distance there. But it's a different story when you're in the same household. So, yeah, it's like taking care of my husband. There have been times where that has been really hard. But the friendship is what sustains me. But they both have bipolar in some form. So it's a little interesting. But
there's a dichotomy within people like us, you know, I have a desire for peace and for joy and for things to be in balance. And yet I have this affinity for insanity.
Well, and
I know
I want to be needed, and that can definitely be unhealthy. And sometimes what's been hard for me this year is just feeling useless. It's like, sure, my kids need me, but that definitely gets old. So it's like, am I allowed to exist on this planet without doing any good for anyone? And, you know?
No.
Well, but I mean, I agree. I think we're here to help. But, like, I think that we have worth even when we do nothing. Like, I don't think you have to earn your worth. That's what I'm saying.
No, I don't think you have to earn your worth either. Yeah. I just think it's much more interesting.
Yes, I agree.
When you have things to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're figuring it out, and I definitely recommend your book. It's heartbreaking, but it's so funny, and your writing is so good, and it's educational and emotional, and I wish you all the success in writing your next book, and I know you're going to do a lot of good.
Thank you so much for your support, Em. You've been absolutely pivotal in helping me grow my advocacy as somebody to try to bring awareness to specifically bipolar disorder because of its rampant movement that it has on our planet right now. And so thank you so much for just being in my life.
Yes, I'm so glad we got to talk. We honestly need to talk more. All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast through Patreon. It's patreon.com/mentalhealthmarriage. Any little bit helps me keep this on the air. You'd be surprised how much it takes to produce one episode of a podcast. I don't mean to make myself sound like a martyr or anything, but it's a lot. But I feel really strongly, and I know that this podcast has had an impact on so many of you. So I just ask for your help. Help me keep it going. And $5 a month goes a long way. So, and also you can reach out to me at mentalhealthmarriage@gmail.com. I try to reply to everyone, not always instantly, but I usually get around to it. So stay healthy, stay sane, and be kind to yourself and welcome all the feelings that you're having. Let them sit with you a while, and oftentimes they'll pass sooner than you thought. So until next time.